Thank you, members, for the double duty today. This committee will be adjourned by 8 o'clock this evening. We have one issue tonight, and that's the issue we've been working on this last month, which is now known as, was LC 82, now SB 1080. Just a little overview for folks that are in the audience and who are listening. What we're going to do, we're going to introduce the amendments that we have been talking about previously. We're going to have an explanation of what the amendments are. Committee members can ask questions about those amendments, so we have an understanding. We'll have a few people testify on that, and then we will go to open testimony, as we have written, up until the time that we can this evening. That'll be approximately a quarter to eight or so. And again, as I will say, as I mentioned in previous, because we'll always have a lot of people like to comment, I'm going to try to keep people to 2 minutes. At least the people that I have signed up here can actually testify. And you know, I'll be as kind as I can, but just keep in mind that when you go along, you're cutting somebody else out, and I'm going to try to avoid that. So, with that in mind, let's open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1080. Patrick.
Thank you, Senator, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1080 requires applicants for a new or replacement driver license to provide proof that they are legally present in the United States before the Department of Transportation may issue, replace, or renew a driver license, driver permit, or identification card. It includes some other provisions related to biometric data, the creation of ombudsman services within the Department of Transportation to help with those applications. You also have before you the Dash 1 amendments that you referenced. Those are summarized in your staff measure summary, and we will be getting a run-through from Tom McClellan from ODOT DMV.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to begin by asking Heidi Altmaier from Legislative Council and Tom McClellan from DMV to come forward to go over with us the Dash 1 amendments and then the questions from the committee on those amendments. Well, I'll let you guys kind of figure out how you want to ham and egg this.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the Acting Administrator of the Driver Motor Vehicle Service Division, Department of Transportation. What I'd like to do is give you just a very quick overview of what the bill is and then run through topically what the amendments include. And Heidi Altmaier is here from Legislative Council to help you with maybe specific sections of the amendment if you have questions about those or how it's been structured, the language has been selected. So first off, just an overview. Senate Bill 1080 requires proof of U.S. citizenship or lawful presence in the United States and a Social Security number or proof of ineligibility for a Social Security number before the department can issue an Oregon driver's license, driver permit, or an ID card. In addition, the bill requires the driver license, driver permit, or ID card of a person with temporary status to be valid only during the person's authorized stay in the United States, or for 1 year if there is no definite end to their authorized stay in this country. Currently, Oregon is one of only 9 states not verifying that a person is lawfully present in the United States before issuing a driver license, driver permit, or an ID card. This bill also provides for an exception for the exemption for the collection of biometric data for persons applying for a license without a photograph and limits this type of issuance to persons not wanting a photo due to religious reasons or facial disfigurement. In addition, this bill allows a previous photo on file to be used for the issuance, the renewal, or the replacement under certain circumstances defined by rule. So both a previous photo and a photo on file could be used under very specific, very limited situations that we would define in rulemaking. The amendments to the to Senate Bill 1080 include a number of changes and clarifications. First off, proof of a Social Security number. The language was changed to indicate that a person satisfies the requirement of providing proof by submitting a document, and a document that we would define through rulemaking. Examples are listed here. A Social Security card, obviously, would be an example of a document. A W-2 form, a pay stub, a benefit letter from the Social Security Administration, or other official documents that a person might provide that would prove that they actually have been issued a Social Security number. Those specific documents would, again, be set in rule. Second, we have added tribal identification cards as a method of proving one's legal presence. It's specifically identified in the Dash 1 amendments, allowing a member of a federally recognized tribe located in Oregon or with an Oregon affiliation to submit a tribal identification card as proof of legal presence in the United States. if the department determines that the procedures used in issuing the card are sufficient to prove that the member is legally present in the United States. Next, limited-term driver license, driver permits, or identification cards. The term limited term was selected because these are for a fixed period of time, less than the 8 years that everyone else would get the card. There was some language in the bill as introduced that would cause it to be a temporary, which could be very confusing with other short-term issuances that we do. So that term is used throughout the Dash 1 amendments, a limited term card. The expiration language was added to indicate that the limited term card must be issued for no more than 8 years. It could have been implied from the original drafting that it could be more than 8 years, and that was not the intent. So we wanted to clarify that. The renewal of the limited term card language was added to show that those cards may be renewed upon proof that the status by which the applicant qualified for the limited term card originally might be also used when they come back for a renewal. It may be the same document that they relied on initially, and that could be a valid document for renewal. Fees have been added to this bill. The language has changed to allow for the limited term card fee to be different from the corresponding fee for an 8-year license. That would be a lesser amount than is specified in the bill. And attached to my testimony is the fees that would be charged for those limited term cards. The effective date, or the operative date, to begin issuing these limited term cards was changed to January 1 of 2010. That additional time will allow us to complete the programming and the preparations that we need to do in order to implement that particular provision. Another change that's in the Dash 1 amendment is the verifying of source documents. It now has permissive language to allow the department to verify source documents with the issuing agency as the systems are developed that we should use to verify those documents. Many of these systems do not exist today. And so it's permissive language allowing us, as they're available, to connect to those systems to verify the data that is on those identity documents. Full legal name. Language was added to allow the printed name to be truncated on the cards, to be shortened. What's actually printed on the cards, if it exceeds the maximum we can currently put on today, which is 39 characters. We would collect the full legal name on the application. We'd have that information, but we would shorten it just because of limited space on the size of the card that we have. The valid without photo license, and using a previous photo, the reference to issuing a license without photo and the ability to use a photograph already on file has been moved to two separate sections within the bill. A valid without photo license would be issued for religious reasons and facial disfigurement. Those are the two limited situations that those would be allowed. That would be effective July 1st of 2008. Using the previous photo on file, the department would write rules to only allow the use of previous photo on file for situations where the person is temporarily out of state, who needs to renew their license or their ID cards to military personnel, or if they've lost their license and need to get that card replaced. The department will check the previous photo against all other photos in the database using the facial recognition technology that we are implementing this summer. So it would not be a way to get around that process. An applicant temporary permit or an ID card is another change. The language is amended to change the term interim back to an applicant temporary permit. That's currently issued today. What the Dash 1 amendment does is expand its use to those situations where an individual does not have the documents that they need at the time they come in the office, but we're assured that they are who they say they are and just are having difficulty obtaining those documents. We will issue a temporary applicant permit, which would allow them to continue driving for up to 90 days with an extension of another 60 days if necessary. Applicant certification, that's another, there's a term in or phrase used in the original bill under penalty of perjury. It was recommended to us that we remove that language from proving eligibility for the ombudsman services. The department will require a certification from the applicant stating to the best of their knowledge that they're legally present and eligible for those services. So it'll be a certification process in the Dash 1 amendment. The temporary license, permit, and ID card issued to persons otherwise eligible but unable to provide produce the required documentation. That's where the temporary applicant permit is will be issued, again, for 90 days and could be extended for 60 days. That provision will take effect July 1st of 2008. Finally, we have fee increases built into this to recover the costs associated with implementation. July 1st of 2008, there's an increase of $1.50 per card issued. We've added to that the $3 that it was approved in the 2005 session for the Senate Bill 640 in 2005, dealing with facial recognition and central issuance. We've added the $3 for that plus the $1.50. So the fees that you see in the attachment show a $4.50 increase. For this bill, it's just the $1.50 that's attributed to this bill. On January 1st of 2010, we proposed that the fees be increased by another dollar to recover the costs associated with issuing the limited term card and charging a lesser amount than maybe what our costs would be to issue that card to offset the additional expense that we will incur without charging a full amount for a shorter term card. The impact to the department, there is a fiscal impact associated with this. We would anticipate an increase in expenditures in the current biennium and in the following biennium. Those provisions are primarily around the implementation and ongoing costs of issuing these different licenses and verifying the legal status of an individual. And the SAVE system, the system that is used to verify immigration documents, connecting to that and using that system, there's a fiscal associated with that. But again, we have a fee increase, two actual fee increases to recover those costs associated with the bill. So in summary, the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 1080 allow the department to implement verification of Social Security numbers and the visual verification of legal presence documents as described in the bill. The department can begin verifying federal immigration documents electronically with the Department of Homeland Security by January 1 of 2009. These amendments will allow the department to verify source documents with the issuing agency as systems become available, and work can be done to connect to the verification systems later. In addition, the department will issue limited terms driver licenses, driver permits, and ID cards to persons legally in the United States on a temporary basis beginning in January of 2010. Again, attached are the fees, as you can see how those would change as a result of the Dash 1 amendments.
Okay, questions from the committee on the amendments? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. I know it's been a tough issue all the way around, and there's a lot of hardworking people out there that are being impacted by the lack of action by politicians up the line from us back in Congress, and we're being forced to deal with something, and I appreciate the agency's willingness to kind of tackle this tough issue, but I want to deal with two issues that are of grave concern to me. Number one is the privacy issue that has been brought up. Once we are accumulating this information, like your biometrics and other things, some of the issues that the ACLU has brought up, I want to ask, how are we databasing this and how are we protecting information that is private, especially in this day and age of ID theft?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, we already collect information on individuals, both data and a digital photo is a biometric as well. And we've been collecting those very successfully for many, many years. There's no reported incidents of any leak, any loss of facial images, digital images. We have very good security in place today. The additional information that we're collecting as part of this bill is really just a verification that the Social Security number matches with the Social Security Administration. What we get back from them is pretty much a yes, no. There's some codes, but it doesn't actually transmit a Social Security number back to us. So there's nothing additional there for that process.
Okay.
We take it very seriously, the privacy and the confidentiality of data and the biometrics.
Mr. Chairman, if I could. The second question, obviously, is something I'm always concerned about. I appreciate the fact that the amendments had the fees specified in the statute rather than doing it by rule. I actually think that's really important for the legislature to do. But obviously what I'm concerned about is the issue that the fees are limited to cost recovery and not a system of acquiring additional revenue above the cost. How are these fees, go over with me real quickly, how these fees were assigned. I understand that from your testimony that $3 of it has to do with the earlier bill.
Yes.
And as I understood, to check in a Social Security number was something like 50 cents. So if you could walk through with me, why is this? Why are these fees that you've laid out here simply cost recovery?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that's usually our charge is to make sure that our fees recover our costs. If any additional revenue is desired, you need to tell us that, and we'll bring those proposals to you. But our purpose really is to make sure that our implementation costs are covered and any operational costs associated with any changes that you propose. So what you see in these fees is an estimate of cost recovery over about 4 to 5 years, both the implementation and the ongoing costs associated with the changes proposed in Senate Bill 1080. So programming, training, the lookup fees that you're talking about as far as a Social Security number or an immigration document, the SAVE system, there's a small, but it, with the numbers that we're talking about, it adds up to quite a bit, costs associated with doing the lookup of these different documents and the numbers that are provided.
So, Paul, you feel like these costs are cost recovery only. We're not doing revenue increasement. This is just to cover the actual hard costs that the department has.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, yes. These fees, they're rounded up to 50 cents. We don't charge 18 cents or 7 cents for a fee. We try to round it up to a 50 cent or a whole dollar just for ease of administration in the field office and making change. So we've rounded up in some cases to the closest 50 cents. But it's not going to generate a lot of extra money beyond what our costs are.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator George. Senator Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a few questions. But let me follow up with what Senator George just questioned you about. My question is related to Real ID. The bill that is in front of us moves us down the road to compliance with Real ID, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, many of the provisions in this bill are included in the Federal Act.
And if I'm not mistaken, when Secretary Chertoff released the rules on Real ID, the number that sticks in my head was their expectations that it was going to cost the average taxpayer, the average cardholder, an additional $8 to comply with Real ID. And you're proposing a $1 increase. Do we expect that you're going to come back to us in 2009 or 2011 with an additional proposal that's going to increase the cards, the cost per card, even more to move us toward compliance with Real ID?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that would be a decision for the governor as far as what we bring forward to the legislature. But there are additional requirements for Oregon if we choose to try to comply with the Federal Real ID Act. And one of the largest costs associated with the Real ID Act is the re-enrollment of people earlier than the 8 years that they have a card that expires. So bringing people in sooner has a significant cost impact. So a large part of the cost that Secretary Chertoff identified deals with that, plus the verification of documents. They've assumed systems will be available out in future years, that states would connect to those and start to use those systems. Those costs are also built into their estimates.
Mr. Chair, can I continue? Thank you. To be honest with you, I'm shocked that you're asking for only a dollar increase. Especially what I know of the computer resources that the department is dealing with. I would guess it's 1950 technology or earlier. 60, okay. But it's old and decrepit, and what is the department planning to do as it relates to bringing the department into the 21st century? At some point in time, are you going to come to this legislature and ask for a package so that we can bring the department up into the 21st century? It seems to me that as you're going through a process of really changing all that we're doing with, as it relates to driver's license, that might be the time to redesign the computer system that's managing the whole process.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I appreciate those comments because we do have needs for our systems. But what we bring forward, again, is up to the governor and the executive branch to determine what actually comes before you. We may need some additional investments in our systems as these additional provisions are brought forward. So you can expect us to raise the issue.
For the conversation. Okay, two last questions, Mr. Chair, if I could. Senate Bill 640 was passed a couple sessions ago. I'm dealing with the biometric information. Is the department on track for full implementation of that? I believe it's supposed to be effective July 1 of this year. Are we on track to do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, we implemented the central issuance requirement of that last summer. And the facial recognition piece is scheduled for this summer. And we're on track to get a pilot going early summer and finishing the rollout later in the summer. I have to be candid that the July 1st date is a question right now for us as we work on that project and with our vendor. But you can be assured that we are taking it very seriously and we'll have it in as soon as possible. But the plan is to have it in this summer. And that would complete the implementation of Senate Bill 640 from the 2005 session.
And then last question, Mr. Chair, and this is a little bit off topic, but the state of Washington is in the process of moving forward and basically an enhanced driver's license to allow cross-border transportation between Canada and the state of Washington. Can you talk a little bit about how that card and that process is different than what we're contemplating here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, the biggest difference is the radio frequency identification that's built into that that document that Washington is offering voluntarily to people who choose to pay $15 more. And it will allow them to cross the border. And it's a pilot being started in Washington.
And that's in cooperation with the federal government? And
yes, it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Let's just be careful with the computers, or some of us will remember $123.9 million. And we're a little sensitive about it, so make sure it works. Question for you guys on page 2. It's lines 10 through 12. Talking about if the person is not eligible for a Social Security number, it would appear to me that that still doesn't alleviate the responsibility to demonstrate that you're in the country legally. Is that correct? Can you tell me whether or not that would... when you go back to Section 2 and you start down through it, it's talking about all of these requirements of legal presence. When we get to this one, if you don't have a valid Social Security card number, it doesn't alleviate the requirement that you demonstrate citizenship or legal presence.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, members of the committee, Heidi Altmaier with Office of Legislative Counsel. Senator George, you are correct. That person still needs to prove that they are legally present in the United States. This is just an option for those who, for whatever reason, may not be eligible for a Social Security number to provide some kind of proof that the department will determine, that will show the department that they're not eligible for a Social Security number. But at the same time, they still need to provide proof of legal presence.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Tom, if you could stay in for a while, or just in case, I'd appreciate that. A couple things before we begin. Other testimony. We have you circulated this?
Yeah.
We have a letter that I'm introducing as the first testimony in support of Senate Bill 1040 from Jeff Lady, President of the Oregon State Police Officers Association, supporting this legislation, so I want to introduce that into the record. And then on the against side, I've asked Jeff Stone to come forward. The Oregon Nurseries Association. And then we'll start on our list. Welcome, Mr. Stone.
Good evening. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, I'm Jeff Stone, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. My association represents the largest agricultural employer and sector with over $1 billion in wholesale sales each year. My association appreciates the reasons behind Governor Kulongoski's executive order and the bill before this committee to tighten identity requirements for Oregon driver's licenses. The nursery and greenhouse industry supports reasoned measures to tighten laws to combat illicit drug trade and identity theft. However, it's important for the committee to recognize the implementation of a more stringent identity requirements for driver's licenses, while based on sound reasoning, creates a new set of public policy problems. In fact, we believe that SB 1080 and the governor's executive order creates as many issues as it resolves. And Senate Bill 1080 will impose serious burdens on hardworking foreign-born workers who provide critically important labor for many sectors of Oregon's economy. Denying these workers opportunity to drive and obtain auto insurance is not a satisfactory response to our failed immigration, federal immigration laws, nor is it a policy that will result in safer roads or a more productive economy. In fact, it's our view that Senate Bill 1080 will mean a reduction in public safety. Senate Bill 1080 and the governor's executive order does create, in our view, an untenable situation for Oregon agriculture. It could drive immigrant workers out of the state, leaving natural resource industries and other labor-intensive businesses without a workforce. An equally unacceptable consequence is the problem of workers remaining in Oregon without participating in our driver's licensing and securing insurance. And any law that puts a chill on an essential workforce is one that is a reason why we're raising our voice this evening. In my testimony, I talk about the basic pilot program, and I'm not going to go into detail about that, but we have serious concerns about its reliability, and I don't think it's ready for prime time yet. If Senate Bill 1080 becomes law, then the governor and the Oregon legislature must address the public safety and economic consequences as a result of this, in our view, one-sided response to an immigration issue. We wish to work with you and the governor and leadership of both parties to provide for a balanced, comprehensive, sensible solution at the federal level. We can do that together. And we wish to preserve the vitality of this state and its economic and these economically troubled times. So I have truncated my statement because you have a lot of people, and I appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Mr. Chair, I notice Mr. Stone is reading from prepared testimony. It would be very helpful to provide the committee with copies if the chair is willing and Mr. Stone's willing.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, I think one of the big issues that we're all facing here, regardless of all the testimony we've heard, is that, in essence, on one side, we're trying to protect the integrity of our identification. At the same time, what really is happening here is a battle over failed federal policy. Mm-hmm. So we're having a state fight over failed federal policy, a policy that clearly is hurting all sides in this whole entire debate. So you said that we could somehow impact federal discussion. How would you suggest that we, as a state legislature, have anything to do with what Congress is refusing to deal with?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, as a federal solution languishes, and it is upon Congress's responsibility to pass a sensible immigration reform. I think it's incumbent upon states to work together. I think it's incumbent upon this governor to work with Western governors to make a voice known for a sensible solution. And it could be a bevy of different type of immigration-related bills. The problem is that you're seeing in other states very anti-employer and anti-worker bills being passed. And that has a very real economic impact. And so that's why I think it's incumbent upon us not to wait for something that's going to be terribly difficult to undergo and pass. But working together, we can put pressure on Congress to pass something sensible.
Mr. Chairman, any suggestions on what we could do to actually get Congress to do this? Because to be perfectly honest with this fight over the integrity of our identification is a rather ridiculous fight, because what we're doing is fighting over federal immigration policy. And it's an incredibly frustrating position to be a state legislator. So what would you suggest specifically we do as state legislators to deal with this? I mean, should we pass a resolution to Congress, or what do you want us to do as far as sending a message to our members of Congress that we need to get off this neutral position of not doing anything other than passing mandates down to us that we have to comply with? I mean, that's what we're doing. We're complying with a mandate and doesn't address the underlying issue.
Well, you raised a question about where to start. And a guest worker program, one that actually works, if it was implemented the way that it should be, the driver's license issue really wouldn't be that much of an issue, because you would have a legal willing workforce that has a visa for a certain amount of time, and you can tie the driver's license to that issue. But it's not an easy answer, and it's one that we have some ideas that we'd be happy to share with you, this committee, and your colleagues about what steps we should take. But I don't want to take other people's time too much, but I'm happy to talk to you about that.
Okay, sure.
You know, I appreciate this dialogue. I actually believe that the action that I hope that we take tonight will force that federal action, because we're creating a, fill in the blank. We're creating a
mess.
A hurricane, a tornado. We're creating a problem, a potential problem, by, I think, doing the right thing. But ultimately what it does is it will hopefully reverberate to the Congress and force action at the congressional level. Whereas if we just sit back and do nothing and hope and pray that the federal government will solve this problem, I don't see it happening. So I think the action that I hope we take today, tonight here, and hopefully in this legislature and before the month is out, will help to force congressional action. The question that I have for you is, you've got similar organizations throughout state, across the nation. Oregon is unique in that we're one of a handful of states that don't already have legal presence. Are your counterparts in states that require legal presence having trouble finding workers? Are some of these issues that you raise evident in those states?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I mean, that's an excellent question, and you crafted it very well. I would say that my counterparts, who I've talked to, agriculture is having a harder time finding workers. It's becoming harder and harder. I would also state that my counterparts in other states who do have legal presence, there is anecdotal evidence, and it's hard to get you a hard number, and we've been trying to get it, preparing this testimony, trying to get you a hard number about a rate, an increased rate of accidents because of lack of learning how to drive, insurance rates going up because of people driving without insurance. It's just not people who are foreign born. It's a general problem. So I have talked to my counterparts in Arizona and Texas and California, and there are issues there, but ones that are not borne by the states who are passing them. It's the responsibility of the federal government, who is not acting. And so we're ready to roll up our sleeves with you, Senator Starr, and get something that's sensible and meaningful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Take question, Senator George, and then we're going to go on to other people.
Thanks. I'll make it quick. I believe it was you that were on Lars Larson's show.
It was a pleasure.
To tell you the truth, I've always been proud to be a farmer, but when I hear somebody admit that about 60% of your employees are illegal aliens, and Lars announced it was 150,000 people with driver's license in Oregon that are illegally obtained, in other words, are not citizens, tell me that you're abiding by all the other regulations that apply to agriculture, pesticide, land use, your data recording, your payment of taxes. Are your members abiding by those laws?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that is a loaded question, and I'll answer it this way. Our growers go through what's called an I-9 process. And Senator Starr asked me on the record last year, how many illegal immigrants do we employ? The answer still is none. It's none. You, as an employer, anybody who has a business knows that when you fill out, you have to abide by certain laws and regulations. And if you start going down a certain line because someone looks a certain way, you will get yourself in a whole heap of trouble. And I guess I reject the premise of the question that 60% is illegal. Lars tried to put in my mouth was that there's a difference, Senator, and you know that there's a difference between knowing and suspecting. And the fact of the matter is, what we are after is an immigration solution that allows us to have a legal, willing workforce. And that's what we're working towards.
Mr. Chairman, wouldn't you support this bill because when the person shows up at the doorstep of your membership and says, I have an Oregon driver or driver's license that's been recently issued, you would know they were legal. Wouldn't you like that? It seemed like you'd be in here supporting the bill. I look forward to the day when that's how we'll make the decision.
Every person who gets hired at a nursery or in agriculture or in a hospitality industry or construction has to show proper documentation in order to be hired.
Thank you, Stone. And I know, Ms. Stone, you've worked on this issue in other parts of your life earlier and on the federal level, and you understand its complexities. And I think we all share the fact that the desire that this issue could be resolved and not just continually punted to the states. But I think, as Senator Starr and Senator Larry George mentioned, it's something that firming up the governor's order isn't going to solve this issue. We have more work to do.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
For your time.
Okay, now what I'm going to do, I'm going to go to these sheets. I will tell you that in our time frame, you know, it's not likely that everyone will be able to testify. We got to be very respectful of those who are testifying. If someone says something that you particularly agree with, because you may not have an opportunity to testify, I have no objections to you raising your hand, so let us know you support that. But please, no oral issues. Also, as I begin this, and I know we've had some people testify previously on the LC version of this who have been here before, keep in mind that in this time that we'll be testifying in the next hour and 5 minutes, that I will do the two-minute thing. You know, don't make me be too aggressive because you're taking somebody else's time. So, as my English teacher once said, you know, half as long is usually more effective, and the Gettysburg Address was less than 240 words and was very memorable. So, with that in mind, I'm going to bring three people up to testify in four. We'll have three, the first three on the list to testify against. And the first three for this measure are Denise Button, Ted Campbell, and Brenda Hallgrimson. And each of you will have 2 minutes. And then please let the other one comment. Now I'll let you, we'll start left to right here. And please state your name for the record.
I'm Denise Sutton, Senator Metzger in committee. I'm here with Oregonians for Immigration Reform, and You Don't Speak for Me, a Hispanic advocacy group based out of California. One of the things I would like to add is that America is a nation of immigrants. I'm Puerto Rican, Italian, Irish heritage. If immigration is truly about diversity, we need to respect rule of law. Real ID is not an issue about ethnic heritage, but about ethics and obeying the laws. What message do we send our children when we allow people to steal an identity or to steal a vote or, most of all, steal a dream? The Oregon legislature needs to address the homeland security safety of all Oregonians and not give legal documents to illegal aliens who have no rights, who cannot read our signs or write or speak English. We need to address this as a civil rights issue for the legal American citizens who feel that these people need to abide by the same set of rules that we do as American citizens, not by their own set of standards. This is an issue of not about race, but an issue about protecting the identities and rights and securities of we the people. This is very important because we need to be mindful that if we want to preserve the American democracy, we need to give the illegal aliens We need not to give illegal aliens the opportunity to vote in our elections illegally. When you cheat, you steal a vote or a voice from somebody like me who is a legal Hispanic American citizen who feels that I am discriminated against. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your brevity. Ms. Sutton. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Ted Campbell, and I'm with the Minutemen's Civil Defense Corps, and I'm here to support the request for stronger requirements for the Oregon State driver's license. There's no reason not to have the proper ID to receive a driver's license. It is easy to get a Social Security number if you have legally entered the country as an immigrant or on a work visa or a student visa. Thus, you're recorded as being a U.S. citizen or in the United States of America legally and becomes a supporter of the state and federal by paying taxes. If you do not want to get an Oregon State driver's license, you can get an international driver's license in your home of record. As long as you have if you're coming from Mexico, have a Mexican driver's license, you have to get it in Mexico. You cannot go to a consulate to get it. I ask you to enforce the governor's executive order and require the proper ID, and if the person is on a visa, have the driver's license expire at the same day as the visa. There are a large number of cars out there being driven by illegal aliens in the state of Oregon who have been issued driver's license. Just think of the fuel saved, the road wear that will be avoided, and auto accidents that might be avoided if we can get them off the road. Please adopt the rules. And I'd like to thank the committee for holding this in the evening so people at work can get in here and say their piece, too.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. That's why we did that. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Brenda Hall-Grimson, and right now, as it stands, our state government officials have taken an oath to support the Constitution of not only the United States, but the Constitution of the state of Oregon. And as of May 2008, the state of Oregon needs to come into compliance with the Federal ID Act. There are a number of reasons that the state should be securing our driver's license as a valid form of ID. We, as U.S. citizens, will be required to have verifiable ID to travel on planes within our own country and to enter into any federal buildings. If Oregon does not comply, they have switched the burden of proof and the financial burden on every legal Oregonian and legal resident to secure a passport, making our Oregon ID not worth more than what the paper is written on. I have listened to both sides of this issue over a period of time. Receiving a driver's license is a privilege. It is not a right. This is not an issue of race, and this is not an issue of racial profiling. This has everything to do with coming into compliance with the Federal ID Act, having the ability to verify secure ID for U.S. citizens, knowing who is in our country, for how long, and for what purpose. As it stands, people in this country who have came here legally are able to receive driver's license with those IDs that federal government has given permission to require, that they required. I've heard the argument that this law would then force people to drive illegally and with no insurance, and some people just need to, you know, get to work and go places. If someone has entered into this country illegally, they do not have the right to be here, nor do they have the right to work in this country, and they are in violation of the Federal Immigration and Nationality Act. Yet, as an American citizen, I make a choice every day to obey or not to obey our laws. If I choose not to, I face not only personal but financial consequences of breaking those laws. If an American citizen were to lose their license and their driving privilege, does that justify an American citizen going out and getting in a car and driving it illegally and without insurance? No, it doesn't. And to have two set of rules.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You exceeded the time. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to go with the order that they were printed on. Andrea Meyer, Olga Guerrero, and Santiago Espinosa. You each have 2 minutes. I know that can be a struggle. It's a very interesting issue.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. As you know, the ACLU opposes Senate Bill 1080, but what I want to talk about today is the unintended consequences on citizens and bring to your attention some amendments we think are important to this bill. First, under the old system of DMV rules, if you lost your license, you'd already had one and you lost it, and you collected various documents, DMV could, as part of proving your identity, use your photograph on record. It's not the only, but it was a part of it. The new DMV rules strictly prohibit the use of your photograph, your biometric photograph, to help you establish your identity when you've lost your license. We're talking about homeless and other vulnerable folks who, even after they've achieved satisfying all the requirements under this, if it's lost 3 weeks later or 3 months later, you can't use the photo. We would urge you to add the ability back into the law to allow your photo to be a part of proof of who you are. It's that biometric facial recognition software photo. It's supposed to be really good. So let's use it to help people. Number two, please do not establish a Social Security number database, which appears to be in this bill on page 4. It specifically references new collection in the system of Social Security numbers, page 4, lines 12 through 14. You've already identified the privacy and risk concerns to that. Number 3, the you are currently allowing for folks who come and have sufficient documents that have some problem with Social Security Administration or some such with a birth date, the ability to get a temporary driving card. We urge you to add a photograph to that, because if they have a problem with the Social Security Administration with a birth date or their name, they will not be able to get into that federal building without a picture photograph identification. I believe your statute requires it to last for only 90 days. Get them the photo so that they are actually able to cure the problems that they may run into at the Social Security Administration.
I'll ask you to wrap up.
I'm almost done, Senator. Four, I'd urge you to ask language barring DMV from either scanning or storing these original documents in the system. It is not required now. It's not necessary, and it creates additional risks to all of us. And finally, the legislation recognizes the need for an ombudsman, because there are going to be problems for citizens, your constituents, but there's no new monies for that. And I believe that will be wholly insufficient to assist folks who are going to have birth date years, name problems. Again, a woman who has a birth certificate in her original maiden name will have to provide all the legal documents showing her name change, and then we'll have to have a match with Social Security Administration. A lot of folks are going to have a lot of problems, so we'd urge some resources there. So those are the amendments we encourage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer, and that is why we have the Ombudsman Program, and the Department has been made very clear that they need to make sure that that resource, however they use that, is takes care of the needs. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Olga Guerrero. I'm a U.S. citizen. My family is originally from Mexico. I believe that taking licenses from our Hispanic community will not benefit our state. This is going to impact all of us in different ways. Like you've previously heard, raising insurance premiums, how will children be getting to and from school? A lot of communities at this time don't even have bus routes to take them to and from school, so parents are having to drive them to school. Now who will take them to school? Or will they even be going? How about our Hispanic teenagers? Parents are going to be required to drive with them. If they don't have a driver's license, who's going to be in the car with them so that they can have that time to drive or learn how to drive? How are parents going to be going to and from work to support their families? Who's going to help them pay their bills? They won't qualify for any state help or assistance. People will also more than likely be afraid to register their vehicles and do it the right way, the proper way, the way that they should be doing it. So I am totally against this bill, and I believe that the state will be losing more money.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, Senators, good evening. My name is Santiago Espinosa. And as a citizen of the United States of America, I ask this Congress to reject the executive order signed by Governor Kulongoski in November of last year. Actually, it went in effect yesterday. It's a registered order. I voted twice for Governor Kulongoski. You know, I don't regret that. I like the governor. But I strongly disagree with his decision on the driver's license issues. All my life, I thought that America was a great Christian and compassionate nation. If that is the case, why are we doing this to these people and their loved ones? I'm talking about the hardworking, law-abiding people that have lived here for the last 5 to 10 years. Take into account the people that have contributed to this state, not only towards our community, but mostly to the economy and safety. If those that refuse to obey the law, it is in your hands to be just. And another point, I remember the first immigrant that came to America in around 1492. My question is, were they legal or illegal? Now, with that being said, I believe that we need to make the proper decision. This can have a devastating impact to the economy and safety to the state of Oregon. May I conclude by stating that Hispanics in Oregon are not connected to terrorism. In other words, they are not terrorists. Members of this body, let's show the people of Oregon and the nation that we care. Let's put ourselves in their shoes. And I thank you, lawmaker, for the opportunity of speaking before you today. And I also wanted to introduce, with my testimony, a proposal for a driver's license to drive valid only in the state of Oregon. And lastly, those who have a child support cases, how are we going to enforce their cases if they do not have a license to be suspended? Therefore, a payment agreement will not take place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Espinosa. Okay, David Cross, Jim Ludwig, and Clark Seavey.
Mr. Chairman, while we're waiting, I think there's some Native Americans that probably wish they'd asked that question in 1492.
Well,
yes.
On the sail of the ocean blue. Welcome. Please go ahead.
My name is David Cross, and I'm a resident of Salem, Oregon. Tonight I brought my Oregon driver's license, I brought my Social Security card, I brought my birth certificate, and I brought my passport. I can prove I'm a United States citizen. Let me move on to that first sheet of my testimony, and I'll just paraphrase and cover just brief parts of it. Currently, there are 156 foreign nationals from my January report in Marion County jails and correctional facilities in northern Oregon and reaching out to Jackson County and NorCor, the Northern Oregon Regional Correctional Facilities. I've been sending you these reports for the past 6 months since the June 2000 session went out without any action on passing a driver's license bill. But let me move on to one case in Yamhill County. On December 3rd, Judith Ann Cox was allegedly killed by Ignacio Marandon Zuriega, 45, a resident of Woodburn, Oregon. Craig Ellen Cox, Judith's husband, received non-life-threatening injuries at the hands of Ignacio Marandon Zuriega. Non-life-threatening injuries. From December 3rd, 2007, and every day forward for the rest of his life, Craig Allen Cox will spend without the love and companionship of his beloved wife, Judith. Ignacio Marandon Zuriega is currently incarcerated at the Yamhill County Jail in McMinnville, Oregon, charged with manslaughter, drunken driving, and driving while suspended, related to the death of Judith Ann Cox. An interesting fact, Ignacio Marandon Zuriega has an Immigration Customs Enforcement hold placed on him by Immigration Customs Enforcement. Who is responsible for the death of Judith Ann Cox and the injuries to her husband besides Ignacio Marandon Zuriega? Had Ignacio Marandon Zuriega, a possible undocumented foreign national, been issued an Oregon driver's license by the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles, DMV? Did Oregon Governor Kulongowski and the 2007 Oregon State Legislature failed attempt to pass a driving license legislation?
I should wrap up, Mr. Cross. Now you're past their time.
Okay. Basically, there are victims out there, real-world victims of crimes committed by foreign nationals, many of them driving-related. December, Washington County Jail, 75 foreign nationals at the jail, 32 of them driving-related crimes. 43% of the foreign nationals in the Washington County Jail in December were there for driving crimes. And you guys got to pass this.
And we have your material. Thank you very much, Mr. Cross. Mr. Ludwig.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Jim Ludwig. I'm president of Oregonians for Immigration Reform. We support passage of Senate Bill 1080. When Governor Kulongowski issued his emergency executive order requiring updated requirements to receive driver's license, he said, and I quote, "Because of our very lenient standards of ID documentation, Oregon has become a destination for illegal aliens and potential terrorists seeking illegal driver's license," close quote. This bill, Senate Bill 1080, would address most of what he's concerned about. And we support three key elements of this bill. One, proof of legal presence. Second, requiring a valid Social Security number. And third, ending the practice of giving eight-year driver's license to people here on six-month visas. Oregon is in a group of a rapidly diminishing number of states that don't require proof of legal presence. Last month, Michigan's Attorney General ruled that anybody in the United States illegally in Michigan is not a legal resident of Michigan and cannot receive a driver's license, and they've ceased doing that, which means Oregon is now one of only six states that does that. As far as verifying Social Security numbers, it's very effective and very prompt and very inexpensive. A clerk at DMV, which should only take them 5 seconds at the most to verify a Social Security number, the cost to the state of Oregon is 3 cents per transaction. Rounded up by DMV to 50 cents, I guess, but it's only 3 cents, so it's very, very inexpensive. And finally, the one omission of the governor's executive order was the requirement that someone here on a temporary basis have a driver's license. It's only valid for the length of time that they're legally in here. And I'm so happy that you addressed that in this bill. So without anything else, we support this bill totally. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lutton.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
That's a good question.
Yeah, let's try to keep minimum so we can hear from the folks.
Jim, thank you very much for coming to testify. Here's the question is that we had a conversation with some of the folks earlier. What is the position of your organization on the issues of guest worker programs, trying to figure out how we get people? I mean, we've had a lot of people testify who obviously would be great citizens or great guest workers. They want to be good participating members of the community. They want jobs. What is sort of, where do you see the balance? Obviously, we're complying with a federal mandate, but what on a national level, what do you think should be done, and what do you think we should be doing as a state legislature to try to move that ball forward in the right direction?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I don't know that I'm the person to answer that question, but I think what Americans want is they want one set of laws that everybody has to obey. One of the things that's drawn people into our country is the concept of the rule of law, where we expect everybody in the United States to obey every law. Obviously, it doesn't always occur, but that's our expectation. When we set up a two-tiered legal system where American citizens are held to a higher standard to obey the law than people who are illegally in our country, we undermine the whole basis of the rule of law. And I think before we do anything about a guest worker program or anything, we've got to come to grips with the basic tenets of our American society, and that is the rule of law.
Real quick, Colin.
Okay, quick.
But in dealing with this and the reality of what we're all facing, how do we put together a compromise where you could have agriculture or the restaurant associations or whatever, how do we deal with the labor issue and giving those people legal presence and then obviously have integrity with our identifications and those kind of things? I mean, is there middle ground in there on some kind of guest worker program?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I mean, first of all, the government has got to prove that they're sincere about any bill. I mean, until they secure the borders, until this state ceases giving driver's license to people who are legally here, why should any citizen have any confidence that the government is going to do what they're going to do? Prove to us first that you mean business, and then we're willing to talk about any other issue. But until that's done, why should we even discuss it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yes, Senator Metzger and committee, my name is Clark Seeley, and wanted to share a little comment with you. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Part of your obligation is to ensure domestic tranquility. And it's obvious that the issues before us are causing great discord in our social fabric. And I certainly appreciate the hard work of those that come into our country. But I just briefly want to say that my mother moved to Woodburn in the 1930s and was on a farm, and her dad, my grandfather, and her brothers and sisters would pitch a tent and go out and harvest the crops. And my mother, when after the war, would started taking us out into the fields before I started the first grade. Worked in the fields up till I was 15, got a work permit, started working in the canneries. At one point I worked in two different canneries, would work one shift and then go to another one. I left the cannery one night to go register at the University of Oregon, and I didn't have time to clean up. I had corn and everything all over myself, and I wanted to get a job while I was at the University of Oregon. And I was getting a job as a janitor, and I came into the guy's office, and he saw me, and I apologized for the way I looked, and he said, "You're hired." And when I was a young man, I worked up in Portland on a farm, probably harvesting upwards to 40 different fruits and vegetables. And one weekend, my brothers and I and several other young people were asked to help to shovel 72 tons of chicken manure. And didn't have a respirator.
I have to ask you to wrap up now.
I just want to say that I know what it means to work in the fields, and part of this problem was created by Washington, D.C., when they would not allow the kids to go out in the fields, and it's wrong for us to expect people that we import people to do our, quote, dirty work. And I do applaud the Hispanic people for the hard work they do, but we do need to have a rule of law, and I believe we should have requirements for our driver's licenses that they provide legal presence in our country.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Robert Dent Smith, Monica Garacci, and Jose Antonio. Welcome. Go ahead.
Anybody else?
Just go ahead and start.
Senate Chair Metzger, Vice Chair Senator Starr, Senator George, and the Honorable Lady Senator Johnson, and Committee Administrator Patrick Brennan. Didn't forget you, Patrick. I'm here for three reasons.
Please, Nate, please address your name, please, for the record.
My name is Robert Dent Smith.
Thank you.
The last name is spelled D-E-N-T-S-M-I-T-H. The D and the S are capital. I'm here on 3 points, senators. As a retiree, as an adopted Native American, although I do not look like one, and because of my Spanish heritage on my father's side, which I do look like, I am a Sephardic Jew, I am an adopted Nez Perce, and I'm a retiree, an Oregon resident. All my life, except for a couple weeks, my mother's water broke when she visited my dad in Seattle during the war, or I would have been born here. Gentlemen, I find very little to disagree with on this bill. I certainly respect the Oregonians for immigration reform. I see their point, but I also see some other points, too. As a retiree, I really appreciate the fact that all the people over here on my left help pay for my Social Security benefits and those of my children and my grandchildren. Section 2B is especially interesting to me as a Nez Perce adopted member. As you know, the Joseph Band of the Nez Perce are still interred in northeastern Washington, although they are believing to be able to return to Oregon at some time. This particular portion here, the way it's is written, might deny them return to their native land. Also, in Section D, if a person is not eligible for a Social Security number, a person shall provide proof as defined by the department. I hope that you will find a way to define proof by the department. I do take really exception to the Section 3, which is in regards to the Social Security number that is verified by the federal government. I've heard everybody speak here tonight about fear. The people on my right are afraid of all sorts of things. The people on my left come here and they are afraid from the time they get here. You folks up there are afraid of the federal government. I have been a history buff all my life. And I want to submit something to you that might help us all. Oregonians are known for being weird, so here's a weird one for everybody to consider.
If you could wrap it up, too.
Yes, sir. Aragon is the Spanish word for Oregon. The Indians mispronounced it, called it Oregon. I believe every rule has an exception, so there's an exception to every rule. I believe every non-citizen of Spanish Indian countries of the Americas is protected by a document while they are in the Oregon country. This treaty document is called the Adams-Onis Treaty of 1818, and Article 1 is the provision and the protection for these people. This land originally was negotiated from Spain and the Catholic Church. John Adams, Secretary of State, former President of the United States, ratified this. And in this agreement, without going into a lot of detail, the descendants and the former parts of New Spain are guaranteed in the Oregon country to people of Spanish heritage. These people come here not only by faith, they come here because their ancestors have come here. As a Native American, maybe some of you are hunters, you know you can't put a wall up in the deer migration route. They're going to migrate. They're going to come. Okay. So I would like to provide you with a copy of what I have written to Central Cultural and to my friend here with the Oregon Immigration Right Reform, sending it to all of you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Okay. Yes, good to see you again.
Thanks, Chair Metzger and members of the committee. I'm Monica Garacki, and I'm an attorney for the Oregon Law Center. The Oregon Law Center's mission is to achieve access to justice for vulnerable, low-income Oregonians and their communities. I'm here on behalf of people who are homeless. Many of these individuals have recently escaped domestic violence, are elderly, or they have physical or mental disabilities. The vast majority of them are lawfully present in Oregon, but it's much more difficult for them to prove their lawful presence and their identity. And that's really because when you're living on the street, when you've lost your home, you're in the middle of personal trauma and disaster, you lose your documents, they're taken from you, and proving who you are and your place of birth then becomes that much more difficult. I just really want to focus on the ombudsman program that you've created. I'm concerned that this program doesn't have the fiscal resources and it doesn't have a clear enough mandate from you to make sure that it really will help people who are going to be affected by these changes to the law. I know I'm limited, but I just want to give you a couple of examples of why we really need this program. A couple of days ago, I got a call from a staff person at one of the homeless shelters in Portland. And she told me that the clients at her shelter are now being told by DMV that even though they live at the homeless shelter, they can't use the address of the homeless shelter as their address to get an ID. And I don't understand why. I'm going to look into it further, but this is a problem that the ombudsman program really could help, as long as it was, you know, made clear that this is something they should help with, and that they're a true advocate for individuals, helping them to navigate Social Security bureaucracy and DMV bureaucracy. And I want to give you another example of a client that I represented.
Real quickly now, because we're over the 2 minutes, so real quickly.
Okay. His name was Michael. I'll call him Michael. That wasn't his name. When he was homeless, and as a child, he spent some time in foster care. And due to a mix-up, he never got a true Social Security number. He was given one, but it was wrong. Somebody gave it to him when he was a kid, and he used it for years. And he had disabilities. He applied for SSI. And he was told by Social Security, the Social Security number that you think you have is totally wrong, and you don't have a Social Security number. And then he tried to get one, and they denied him. And part of that was because he didn't have ID. He had a birth certificate. He had some other documents. So, you know, this is why we need a really strong ombudsman program. There are a lot of people like him, and I think for Oregon, it's going to be the difference between people getting housing, getting employment, getting the chance to end their homelessness, or sleeping in the woods like Michael was.
Well, Ms. Garocki, I will tell you that, again, as I mentioned earlier, I absolutely agree with you. That's one reason I insisted that be part of this legislation. The department understands this as well. I've made it very clear in our hearings prior to, I don't want to be having people walk out of DMV offices who are legal residents of this state and, you know, we're not helping them. You know, that's why we have some of these other deals in there. If the department needs additional resources because of the magnitude of those individuals, I'm sure they will come to us. But in the meantime, they are, mentioned in the bill, directed to use whatever resources are necessary within the department. I don't care how many people they have to reassign to meet those needs. So we're going to watch that very carefully. I believe they are committed to doing that. I think we need to make sure that this is as inconvenient as possible for the very stories that you've articulated. So thank you very much. Yes, sir.
My name is Reynaldo Soriano, and I want to say thanks
who?
For...
You are who?
Reynaldo.
Okay, I have a Jose Antonio.
Okay,
there.
So I'm going to speak to for them because they don't speak English.
Okay,
and
thank
I'm
gonna, you.
I'm going to try.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead then.
I want to say thanks for the democracy we got here, but we really need to get in, do something. It's not about politics or anything, so... but. We have to do something for the people. Like I say, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We gotta do something here because this is gonna be for always. But we really have to do something about driver license. We're not talking about criminal people. We are talking about the people that is making your food, doing your landscape, your janitor. We really need each other. This is the greatest country in the world. So we're going to stay here. So we have to do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Thank all three of you. Okay, Elizabeth Van, is that Slaverin? No, I butchered it. You can correct me. And I apologize. It's one of your constituents, Senator George. Linda Chambers, Kathleen Peake. This is my problem of reading. It's not yours. So I apologize in advance, but please state your name correctly for the record, and we will try not to err again.
Chair, I'm not sure. Members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Van Staveren.
And I'm glad we're now even.
I live in McMinnville, Oregon. I support passage of SB 1080, which would require proof of legal presence to obtain a driver's license. It is of utmost importance that Oregon take all steps possible to cooperate with the federal government in the apprehension and deportation of illegal aliens. Illegal immigration is a deadly danger to the citizens of this country. It threatens the sovereignty and survival of the United States. Other states have long ago required verification of Social Security numbers of driver license applicants. I am grateful to Governor Kulongoski for issuing his executive order rectifying requirements. A recent poll shows there is widespread public support for tighter restrictions on the issuance of driver's licenses. Some opponents of SB 1080 claim that the new requirements would cause hardship on citizens and legal residents, but they greatly exaggerate the supposed difficulties. As a longtime student of family history, I know that obtaining birth certificates or proof of citizenship for anyone born or naturalized in the United States in the last 8 or 9 decades is rarely a problem. People accommodate themselves very quickly to new laws that they feel are justified and desirable. Tougher identification rules went into effect January 31st along the nation's borders, and customs officials said that delays were minimal across the country and that most border crossers had the documentation they needed, according to an Associated Press article in the Oregonian on February 1st. Preliminary reports showed a high level of awareness and compliance. I believe Oregon will see similar cooperation because the public strongly supports stricter controls for the issuance of driver's licenses. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, thanks for letting me speak. Linda Chambers, I'm from Brownsville, Oregon. I was a legal immigrant to this country. I'm now a proud United States citizen, and I don't think it's too much to ask people to follow the law of the country that we want to immigrate to. It was not the easiest thing for us either to, as some people say, jump through a loophole, you know, the loops, you know. We jumped, you know, if we wanted to be a part of this country, and other countries don't make it as easy as this country does, actually. I think it should be a little harder, but that's another issue. And I know before I was a citizen, I had applied to the United States Post Office, and I was pulled out of line. I had a green card, but I was pulled out of line because I was not a United States citizen at the time. I don't know what it's like now in the post office. This was back in the early 80s. And I didn't demand that those rules be changed for me. I just, actually, it was good because it made me think, I think I better become a citizen here because there are opportunities that I'm not getting not being a citizen. So that was kind of a good thing for me, actually, because quite honestly, I never really thought about it. I was young and kind of dumb, I guess. But I am now a proud citizen, and I support the Senate bill 1080. I don't think it's too much to ask if you're here legally. And I want to make sure that people that are voting with me are legal, that are voting legally.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I just want to ask one more time, is Kathleen Peek not here?
She just doesn't want to speak.
Okay, that's okay.
Okay.
So then I have one
other. Supports it also.
I'll ask one other person then, Daryl Hallgrimson, would be the third one of this group.
I'd like to thank you for having this meeting this late so that a lot of people could get here at work. And I'd just like to say that driving is a privilege in the state of Oregon. And to think it is a right or a driver's license is a right, that's wrong, because along with driving comes the responsibility. And I've heard a lot about how they won't try to get driver's licenses, or if they're not able to, or they won't get insurance. And I taught all three of my daughters how to drive, and they know the rights and the responsibilities of driving. And one of those responsibilities is carrying insurance. And I just want you to know that I support this issue, and I support 1080, and I just thank you for hearing the testimony.
Thank you for coming this evening. Okay. Guadalupe Sandoval, Victoria Lara, and Felisa Higgins. Are you all here? There's one of them. Guadalupe Sandoval, Victoria Lara, and Felisa Higgins. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Victoria Lara, and I represent the Oregon Coalition for Public Safety. We are here, Latinos, we are here as active citizens of this state. We also help to grow the state economy every single day. We are Oregonians just as you are. We own businesses, we pay taxes, we go to church, we volunteer. We work very hard for this state and our families. It's very sad hearing all these people that say that we don't want to follow the law. We know drivers is a privilege. We really know. We have learned it. And every one of us can tell you, since we come here working for the nothing and working our way up and going to school and learning English, it's very difficult. We do it because we have to. Maybe you don't know how to live in poverty, but that's why we're here. That's why we left our family there. You know, maybe we don't have the political power that you request, but we do have economic power, and we are going to exercise that power, because we can do it.
Latino, maybe you don't like it, or maybe you like it, as the fastest growing group in the United States. You know, in Hillsboro, for example. The Latino buying power just in Portland, DMA area, is calculated to be over $4 billion. The 2007 report showed there are close to 200,000 undocumented workers, and those workers have families, and their kids are citizens. And they have an annual income of $2.5 billion a year. Undocumented workers in Oregon pay approximately $187 million of taxes every year. Income taxes, $90 million. Social Security, $79 million. Medicare taxes, $18 million. There are also $136 million taxes paid by Oregon employers on behalf of those undocumented workers.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up now.
Okay. The needs of citizens cannot be reduced to the needs of personal political agendas. The policies to promote a better and fair community must take precedence over the pursuit of a personal political power. We will continue to work and live in Oregon, and we will continue to give ourselves and our life for a better Oregon. Work with us, please.
Thank you. Okay.
Maria Sandoval.
My name is Maria Sandoval.
Me dirijo a todos ustedes, los señores de la mesa directiva.
She wants to say to you guys that, hi.
En nombre de todos mis hermanos latinoamericanos, en nombre de ellos, me dirijo a ustedes a pedirles la licencia para todos, que es un privilegio para todos nosotros.
She wants to ask for the driving license for everybody, because it's a privilege.
Que los necesitamos para el trabajo,
we needed to go to
para
work.
Todas nuestras necesidades.
For all the necessities that we have.
Así como es difícil estar sin la licencia, cuesta mucho trabajo conseguir la licencia. Los pocos que la tenemos la cuidamos para beneficios de todos.
And the ones that we have, we take care of the driver's license.
Y en nombre de todos vuelvo a pedir que nos ayuden ustedes a tener la licencia, porque es un gran privilegio. También es un documento muy importante para todos nosotros, para identificarnos. Las personas que no la tienen, con muchos sacrificios, tratan de conseguirla.
To get the
y en nombre
license,
de todos ellos,
to
pido
in the name of everybody,
que nos apoyen ustedes a tener la licencia.
To help us to have the driver license.
Nos sirve para identificación, más aparte nos sirve para estar mejor aquí, identificados, y no cometan errores de que no tengan una identificación segura.
It's part of identification and help us to be here and secure.
En nombre de todos mis hermanos hispanos, les
brothers,
pido de favor que nos apoyen a tener la licencia. Eso es todo. Muchas gracias. Que estén bien.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Alisa, you are next.
Senator Metzger and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Felisa Higgins, and I'm the political director for SEIU Local 49. We're here testifying today in opposition to Senate Bill 1080. I would like to state for the record that we would look forward to working with the committee around making changes amongst the issues that I'm going to raise here today. I'd also like to state that my testimony is directly in response to the implementation of this bill and is not a commentary on immigration, but more a commentary on the implementation of the Senate bill.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a quick question?
Yes, sir.
Is SEIU opposed to this bill, or are you personally opposed to the bill?
SEIU.
Okay, thank you.
So I just want to walk through really quickly is that the bill makes some assumptions about different government agencies and sets some timelines out that we have a little bit of concern about. The first is that the Social Security Administration has accurate records. The Social Security Administration on their own website admits to a 10%
error rate in their database, and to make corrections to those errors can take up to 2 years. As the president of our local found out, who was born and raised in Oregon and has held the same job for 20 years and has had to correct her Social Security number twice. So the other options, the other things that this bill assumes is that you need multiple pieces of identification to then obtain a Social Security card, including a driver's license, identification card, or a passport. Once again, you would need a driver's license identification card to obtain a passport. So it just sets up a dynamic where there's no system for a temporary identification card or some sort of valid temporary ID with your picture, birth weight, et cetera, to obtain the information needed to then get the documentation needed to make sure that you're a legal permanent resident. So we'd like to work out some of that. We appreciate Chair Metzger's comments around funding the Ombudsman program, and we would like to work with the chair and the committee to establish funding through that, through the Ways and Means process, many of which the members of this committee sit on. So, and so we would just, FAA Local 49 would like to just represent our concerns and offer ourselves available to help make changes to the bill as we move forward. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Dirk has a question.
Thank you. I think one of the issues that I could come back to is that this is what's happening is we're trying to deal with immigration policy through an ID policy, and it seems rather ridiculous to me. I know you're not here to discuss immigration policy,
sure,
but at some point there is a debate going on in Congress, and it appears that many times the unions are blocking efforts to come up with a reasonable guest worker program. And you don't have to discuss it with me here tonight, but at some point I'd really like to get SEIU's view on how we actually get reasonable immigration reform through at the federal level. I mean, at some point we got to protect IDs, but we also got to get Congress to move forward. And I don't know if you can comment right now or if you want to comment sometime later when I can be better briefed on the union's position.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, I'd be happy to have a separate conversation with Senator George. I would like to say that the position of our union is that we do need to deal with the shortage that we're facing with workers throughout this country, including in really key areas that I know that this legislature is working on, including health care. And so I'd be happy to touch base with you about our position as a union on how we deal with future flow.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And a couple of things, too, as Felicia's moving out, is as you notice in the amendments, we do attempt to address the temporary license for people with the 90 days and the 60-day extension. And I appreciate the comments in the Ombudsman program as well. Okay, we have about 15 more minutes for testimony. I'm going to go with Christopher Darnell Wilson, Doug Smith, and Adolfo Lopez, who are my next three signed up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd also, I wrote down my...
Please, your name for the record.
Oh, my name is Christopher Wilson.
Thank you.
My testimony, I've typed up my testimony, I'd like to submit it to you for copies.
Yeah, we can get that. Okay, thank you.
Okay. So, first to begin this, my testimony, I'm not a racist, I'm not a bigot, nor do I harbor any will against any person that is not a citizen of another country, that is a citizen of another country, or there's no nationality than myself. I'm an American, Oregonian, a veteran that has been deployed for my country and my state with the 1042nd Medical Company Air Ambulance, a public servant working as a state employee, a taxpayer, and a citizen. Tonight, I testify as a citizen and as a taxpayer. Immigration law violators are called under many names, such as undocumented immigrants, illegal immigrants, and so on. I propose to you that by definition of what an immigrant is, these terms do not fit and only hide and minimize what is at the heart of this debate. Violating immigration law is a crime. I am not here to educate the public or the legislative body on the law, only to impress upon you that we are essentially debating ethics and an ethical compromise proposed. The proposal will affect real people, real children. This will affect people that are our neighbors, that are our friends, and for some that are our family, no matter what decision is made. But I tell you that this is a challenge to us and to you as true stewards of the public trust to put aside what can feel like the emotional need to help every poor and disenfranchised person that's not a citizen of the United States. and to do what is ethically and morally right by current law, and to do what is right by the citizens of America and the state of Oregon. I start to lay out several reasons why I support the current Senate bill, but I'll start to cut to the chase. No governmental entity should sponsor or virtually create the illusion that a person is in the country legally or legitimately. People should not be able to cherry-pick the laws that they want to follow and justify their activity as legal because they are only trying to make a better life for themselves. Criminals, drug addicts, many law violators will minimize, justify, and rationalize their actions when they commit crimes. The same paradigm applies for those that commit the crime of violating immigration law. National security and integrity of the law should be the foremost part of any decision made regarding this issue.
We have to ask you to wrap up, Mr.
Yes,
Wilson.
Sir.
And I do appreciate you writing this. We can see it.
I know. I figured I would.
Yeah, that was very good.
Let me skip right down to the bottom. If you're not willing to make the hard right task for me, my family, and my federal peers, or for the passage of Senate 1080 and the compliance of the Federal Real ID Act, please do it for the rights of Deputy Kelly James Fredenberg, who died when an illegal immigration law violator struck his squad car. Make your right and ethical decision for Deputy Fredenberg's wife and two daughters. If you're not, that's not enough to persuade you to make the ethical decision, then please make a hard right decision for Danny Countryman, who was raped and had her throat crushed and was killed by two immigration law violators who issued State of Oregon IDs. The majority of citizens are asking to enforce the law that you have sworn to uphold. With great respect, I do ask that you make the ethical, moral, and law-abiding decision to support Senate Bill 1080 in the compliance of the Real ID Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Doug Smith. I'd urge the committee to kind of stay focused on this bill. We're dealing only with fraudulent use of State of Oregon driver's license. It's not about a lot of other things.
I understand. We try to give as much free rein as we can.
Okay. I'd like to thank the governor for sponsoring the bill. I understand it's basically his bill, and I thank you, Senator Metzger, for chairing the bill. And that's about it. I hope that the governor would have his people who are dealing with the fact that they can get fraudulent Oregon driver's license taken in other state and use our fraudulent driver's license to get valid driver's license in other states. That's the main reason he has the bill. And I'd hope that he could bring some people from his staff and the state police to talk about the background of this, but I haven't seen this happening yet. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. The only thing we do have on that regard, we have had testimony by the governor's office previously as we were doing this in pre-session, and then we do have a letter from the Oregon State Police officers regarding
that. Yeah, I saw that. I also like to thank you for letting both sides testify equally. 2 weeks ago was all one side.
Well, it's the way it's signed up, and we have more signed up today. So thank you. I really can't read this. The next name on the against list. I'm sorry. I can't make anything out of that. I'm going to ask, looks like Jonathan Jariata. Am I on the right track with someone here? All right, you're going to fill me in. Thank you. And Christian Beltran. Again, it's my reading, not your writing, okay?
Welcome. Good evening. My name is Jonathan Barraza. I come as a student, as many of my fellow students. I was brought here a long time ago, about 15 years, by my parents. And sadly, I'm still not a citizen, but on the process, my father is a citizen. And with this law passed by governor, it would make one thing harder for me to go to school, which I am trying to get a higher education, going to college, have worked my whole high school career to get there, and with all the things of me being illegal and on the process is one more thing making it harder for me and other people or thousands of students like me to get a higher education. I would really push you guys to rethink this. We have thousands of students like me who have been here more than 10 years, 15 years like me, and we have no clue on why this is being done or how. The only thing I found out was you're going to get your license taken because you're not a citizen, and all I know is I'm becoming a citizen soon. I've been working my whole life to become a part of this country. I've been doing all the right things. I'm trying to be a better citizen, get a higher education, and be part of this economy that seems to be doing good. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thank you for your great efforts. Senator Durbin.
Quick question. Do you have a Social Security card?
Not at the moment.
Oh, you don't? Oh, okay.
I'm in the process of doing that through my father, which is a citizen. And I'm still waiting.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Yes, Senator Durbin.
How old are you?
I am 20.
You're 20. And at what age did you come to the country, this country?
I was 5 when I came here.
5 years old. And what's how close are you to citizenship?
Real close.
Thank you. Well, good. Well, best of luck to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Christian Beltran. Am I here?
Nicolás Beltrán.
My name is Nicolás Beltrán.
Antes que nada, el respeto que ustedes se merecen.
Before everything, I give respect.
Vengo a pedir ayuda de ustedes.
I'm here to ask for help.
En nombre de todos mis hermanos hispánicos.
Brothers, brothers.
Y a mis compañeros de trabajo.
And a co-workers.
Que nos ayuden a con las licencias porque
he wants to ask for help.
Nosotros no somos terroristas.
With the driver's license, we are not terrorists.
Solo estamos aquí para trabajar.
We are here to work.
Y necesitamos ese documento
we need that document to work.
Porque necesitamos cambiar nuestros cheques.
Because we need, and when we get our paychecks, we need something to be able to change that, to cash the checks.
Y yo trabajo en el campo.
And I work on the fields.
Y mi trabajo está retirado de aquí.
And I work far away.
Y todos mis compañeros también viven lejos.
And all my coworkers.
Y necesitamos ese documento para poder manejar hasta allá.
Live far away and they need the documents to drive.
Si no, ¿cómo vamos a hacerlo?
And to get to work.
Si nadie nos va a creer la right.
And nobody else is going to give them the right. Because everybody's in the same. Uh-huh. They have the same problem.
Y por eso estoy aquí para que ustedes nos ayuden.
That's one of the reasons I'm here.
Y nos apoyen. En nombre de mis compañeros de trabajo y todos los que estamos aquí en este país.
And name that everybody is in this country.
Y venimos a este país a trabajar.
And we are here to work.
Para sacar a nuestras familias adelante.
To help our families.
No venimos a hacer daño a nadie.
We're not here to do something bad.
Por favor, les ayudo que
please
nos ayuden.
I'm asking you for help.
Por una persona que hace un crimen.
If just one person do something bad.
Estamos pagando muchas personas que no debemos pagar.
As we are paying for that person. And we don't want to pay for that.
Y yo les pido que nos ayuden. Ustedes
I'm asking you for help.
Ustedes son las únicas personas que nos pueden
you
ayudar.
You are the only people who can help us.
Muchas gracias por su atención.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Solomon Soto. Is Solomon Soto here? You're going to work out today.
Mi nombre es Salomón Soto. Gracias por atendernos.
Thank you for attending us.
yo soy un trabajador de la construcción y estamos muy consternados con esta medida.
I work as a construction worker and we are very worried about what's happening.
Nosotros estamos muy, muy dispuestos a buscar soluciones para
find solutions
para este de medidas que hay alrededor
for
de nosotros
that you guys
y entendemos que no es fácil pero estamos muy dispuestos para unirnos como comunidad las problemas que nosotros veamos como comunidad entre nosotros mismos
a
mejorarlos.
We want to see if there is one problem in that community we want to do better.
Y queremos que nos den la oportunidad de demostrarlo.
And we want to ask you to give us an opportunity
Porque ahora que vemos esto tan cerca,
but
estamos más preocupados.
Trouble, so
y lo vamos a hacer. Gracias.
And we want to do the better.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. What I'm going to do now, in terms of our testimony, we've heard now 12 proponents, other than the ones that I asked to come up with, pro and con, and 12 against. We're getting close to that time. I want, Tom, if you would come back forward, I want to address a couple of issues that came up in testimony. So there's some clarity on this that Ms. Meyer brought up. The first of all was the concern that there was something new about the fact of having driver's Social Security numbers on file. And I know mine's on file. Why don't you explain what the current situation is and how, if any, that is changing, and also the concern that, you know, scanning and storing other documents. If you could address those, I would appreciate that.
Chair Metzger, again, my name is Tom McClellan with the Department of Transportation. We've been collecting Social Security numbers for many years. Our commercial driver license applicants for at least 8 and maybe even longer than that. So I believe everyone in our database right now who's applied for and received a commercial driver license, we have a Social Security number for those individuals. Not quite as long with the standard Class C passenger applicants, but still, again, 4 or 5 years, and probably 3/4 of the applicants have provided Social Security numbers to us. What's different about Senate Bill 1080 is that we're now required to check those numbers, to verify those numbers against what's in the database for the Social Security Administration. And that's a combination of name, date of birth, and Social Security number being sent to SSA to confirm that that is what they have on file in their database. And so that's the change. It's not a new collection of Social Security numbers that's being prescribed by this bill.
Well, I want to make that clear so people understood that they already have them on file. Except mine is on file. There has been for many years. It just shows that we've never picked up the phone and verified. And
yes,
that's what
correct.
We will do now as a result of that. Okay. And then there was some concern about there might be other documents that you would scan and retain. And as you know, the Senate is very concerned about the privacy aspects of the Real ID, which is why we're not doing that part. We're still resisting that. And maybe you could talk to us about that.
Senator Metzger, the Federal Real ID Act does have provisions in it to require state motor vehicle agencies to collect an image of any identity documents that's presented as part of the driver licensing or ID card process. We do not have that requirement in Oregon. That requirement is not in Senate Bill 1080. We're not doing that within the state of Oregon right now. So there's no record kept, no secret databases of identity documents that are presented to us as part of the process. A person presents it to us, we review it, determine if it's valid, and through a visual inspection of that document, we return it to the individual, and no copy is kept or retained.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I've just gone through a disaster in my district with the flooding, and many people are having a great deal of trouble interfacing with their insurance companies. I'm very worried about the Ombudsman program and the requirement in this bill for you to find funds inside your department to do it. I'd like you to talk to the committee about your belief that you will find adequate resources to make this a robust program so there aren't undue waiting lines, that it's convenient for people who maybe live at a distance from Salem and driving is not an option to get here. Talk a little bit about the implementation and the costs that you see associated with implementing the Ombudsman program.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we're getting a test drive of that right now. Yesterday, the governor's executive order took effect and has similar types of provisions in it to Senate Bill 1080. In anticipation of that, we formed a special unit within our call center with people trained specifically on how do you get a Social Security card or a replacement Social Security card? How do you get a passport? How do I get a copy of a birth certificate from Iowa, Pennsylvania, or someplace else? They've been trained to answer those types of questions that we anticipate, and as more come along, we'll train them in those specific situations as well. There's a lot of different combinations and permutations of things that we could be presented with, but our approach has been to identify a core group, about 6 people, that are trained to handle these types of calls. And we'll get some experience to see what the call volumes are. As soon as they come in, as soon as the call comes in to our standard line and it appears that they need some special assistance, we're going to refer it to this group and get them working on it. So it's more of a case to be managed, not a call to be answered.
Two things. Where do these call center folks reside? Are they ODOT employees? Is this outsourced? Who are these folks?
Chair Metzger, Senator Johnson, these are employees of the department located here in Salem. So part of our call center. It's a special unit that we've created within the call center. Long-term support for that unit will depend on our ability to find savings elsewhere within our division, unless additional resources are provided. So it'll be a bit of a challenge, I'll admit to that, but we're committed to providing that type of support because we know this will have unintended consequences and people will need extra help.
Is there any higher level of security background checks that you're doing on any of the folks in that unit, given that they're going to be dealing with people's most confidential documents? That's the first question. The second question is, would you actually foresee a scenario by which this unit could be doing basically case management, helping people figure out how do I get a copy of my birth certificate from the courthouse in Iowa?
Chair Metzger, Senator Johnson, we're not currently providing any additional background checks on these employees, but they're not dealing with the personal information as much as they're trying to help the people obtain what they need. Who do you call? Where's a website that has the information that I need? Where's the local office in my city or the closest one to where I'm at? It's those types of questions and I was going to say hand-holding, but it's special assistance to people to help them get to where they need to go, frequently with a federal agency or maybe another state or county elsewhere with birth certificates to know how to get that information, the documents that they need to obtain.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Tom?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those of you that are listening that had signed up and have written testimony, please submit that. We can take your written testimony, and just due to time constraints, we're not able to listen to have everybody testify. I wanted to get that out there. Question for you, Tom. There's a number of states. Oregon is moving toward legal presence. Majority of states already require legal presence, but there are a few states that still don't. If an individual comes to DMV with a driver's license from a state that doesn't have legal presence requirement, will that driver's license be used in any way, shape, or form to determine legal presence as it relates to their being in Oregon?
Chair Metzger, Senator Stark, we really haven't thought through all the rules that are going to be required as far as documentation to be accepted. I believe there'll be other documents besides another state's driver's license. I haven't thought it completely through how that would work, to tell you the truth.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
All I know is that when other states went to legal presence, Oregon's driver's license was not used to determine legal presence in those states. So
yes.
Something for the department to consider as they work through the rules process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, basically, who right now has access to my Social Security number and my driver's license in the department? And who? How do we make sure that information that's currently in the database that we have stored is secure? And is there additional legislation that's needed to make sure that the people who have access to that information is limited to those who have to have it?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, it's limited to employees that are involved with the issuance process or driver licensing activity. So it's a data element available to employees. It is restricted access. I imagine there are ways to be even more secure in the processes and the systems and what's actually available, and we are currently actually looking at that much more closely. The main change in Senate Bill 1080 is that you now have a confirmation, or not, that the SSN is valid. And so it actually increases its value and its importance that we be very careful in its who has access and how that would be released. So we will continue to look at ways that we can strengthen, tighten up access and potential inappropriate release of that, that important data.
Thank you.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, a lot of concern in here, probably people who have driver's license, maybe one of the 150,000 that we've issued. Do they have to fear anybody coming back when they're holding a valid driver's license? We issued it with a date, say, maybe 3 or 4 years from now. Do they have to worry about this issue until that period of the expiration of that
driver's license? Mr. Chair, Senator George, only if they lose it.
Only if they lose it.
If they have a card that expires in 6 years, they can wait until 6 years to come back in to apply for a renewal, and then they're subject to the new requirements. If they lose that card, though, after the effective date of this bill, they will be subject to the new requirements.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, this is more of a comment. Tom, I have to tell you, I came in here prepared tonight to vote no on this bill. But based on the testimony and the straightforward way you have presented this and the explanation of the bill, I will be a yes vote. And I just really appreciate to have you personally, the kind of person that you appear to be, to come in here and answer the question straightforward. I personally appreciate that a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? Sir? Okay. The chair erred in one case. I'm going to ask one other person to come up from Senator Berger's district, who is absent at a funeral today, and I skipped over that. That was my error. So Paco Maribona, or Marbona, if you would please come forward, and we'll conclude with you, and we'll move into our work session.
Good evening. Thank you. My name is Paco Maribona from Glen Eden Beach. I have an insurance practice in Lincoln, Allain County. I've been there for Lincoln County, basically, excuse me, for over 25 years. So, but I have some very key concerns. I hate to spoil your party, folks. You may have to take that vote back, Senator George, because this bill is fatally flawed. It cannot be passed in the form that it is, and it also relies on some things that are just not going to work. I have given you four handouts. Handout number one goes to my number one. Relying on Social Security numbers for verification is really fatally flawed, and they have too many errors. I don't know if you were aware that in November, the court ruled, for the time being anyway, the Department of Homeland Security has abandoned its efforts to enforce the proposed no-match rule with employees and employers because the database is so bad. And in fact, according to Social Security's own Inspector General, they say that more than 70% of the errors, discrepancies on Social Security database are from U.S. citizens. This is from a lot of things, divorces, marriages, etc. But the point is, it is not a reliable database. The other base, the SAVE, S-A-V-E, is even more unreliable. And some states have found that it takes months to have some information. Now, in number two here, and I really do recommend that you read this. I know you don't have time right now, but let me refer you to page 14. I'm sorry, page 4. It says via electronic mail, this one here, from the National Immigration Law Center. It basically says that there are so many. You can go through about 3 or 4 pages of legal types of IDs for Social Security, immigration, including the I-94, letter from Citizenship Immigration. There's all kinds of different things, including federal court finding that a person is basically here legally. There's all kinds. Again, if you just go through these statements, there's one page 6 says. At the very top, an immigration document such as a permanent resident card may have an expiration date that has passed, but the actual status has not expired. You're going to find this is such a labyrinth that not only can immigration system not do it, there's no way the Department of Motor Vehicles can do it. So what I'm saying is that this bill creates more problems than it solves. It is not ready. It's not ripe. As you can see from all the people that want to testify, we need to take a step back. Oregonians and lawmakers today together look, and in the next session, in the regular session, if the bill is needed, then we will have the history. The databases by your own person from Department of Motor Vehicle, he says that we only have Social Security. There are other databases that are not available yet. I submit, folks, if this bill is the solution, then what's the problem? We're going to have such a big problem trying to implement it. There's a couple of other things. DHS and most states do not recognize the many INS, ICE documents that would prove legal status. You're going to be put into a quandary where there are people with different kinds of documents than a passport and are legal, but your folks at DMV have no clue if that's legal or not. Okay, other problems like that. Safety issues.
Well, I'm going to stop you there.
Okay.
We've heard a lot about safety issues.
No, but just...
And we have them in your documents.
I just wanted
to give you the time that I promised I would.
Thank you.
Except I don't want to give any more time than I did
right.
everyone else.
May I just wind up with just a...
Very quickly, yes.
Okay. Again, I just wanted to mention on that if we have licenses for all, our insurance premiums, several studies have shown, will go drop by about a third. That'd be pretty nice. The law enforcement and national security issues say that we should have everybody licensed. That way the cops don't have to go after non-criminals. But there's a lot of reasons. I'm not going to go through them all. You have the four. You have 2 pages worth of sheriffs and law enforcement people to say this is not a good way to go. And again, because of the less inclusive databases and all these other reasons, Senate Bill 1080 needs to be at least delayed until next session, and the bill we have before you should be withdrawn in its entirety. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Mullen. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1080, open a work session, and before we do anything, I want to say a couple things, and then I'll give every member of the committee an opportunity to speak. One of the things is I want to make it very clear, and I've done this a number of times, but I know it's very difficult to comprehend some of the issues that have been brought up over the last month or so, and I think are very valid issues, clearly indicate that, you know, this isn't the end yet for this whole issue for a lot of different reasons. But I think it's important that people understand, and as difficult as it may be, is that people who see the issues with Social Security numbers, we understand that. That's why we have the ombudsman program. The fact of the matter is that it's already law. Under the governor's executive order, it is law as of yesterday. That doesn't go away. Even if this bill never passed, it still is there. The only thing that would exist is a lot of the problems that were articulated in the amendments to try and make it smoother. But it would still be the law. It would just be some of the issues that were brought up would be even more difficult. But this is not the end of that, and I just want to make sure people understand that. This bill goes to another committee. This is not done yet. It goes to Ways and Means, where some of the issues regarding funding of ombudsman will be addressed, and we want to make sure that they have an opportunity to vent those correctly. And I know we have members on this committee, Senator Johnson, on Ways and Means to help address some of the issues that were brought up tonight. It would be my desire to move the dash one and move the bill to Ways and Means for its next round. Senator Starr.
I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 1080.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 1080. Discussion on the amendment. Any objections to the adoption? Okay. So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move the Senate Bill 1080 as amended by the dash ones to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 1080 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion on the bill. Remember, if they'd like to make a comment, this would be the time to do that. I'll start with Senator George, if you have any comments you'd like to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I obviously have grave concerns about the bill from a lot of different perspectives. Obviously, one of my biggest ones is the issues of privacy. I want to continue to press on all of our state agencies that have issues where they take our Social Security numbers, that those are protected, and especially as they get into using Social Security number as more of an ID, which I don't think Social Security numbers were ever intended to do that. But now that we're moving into that area with the Real ID Act, I want to press, obviously the administrator has given us confirmation that he's working on that, and I appreciate it, and I trust that we can go forward. I find that this issue is so incredibly frustrating because those of us who believe in the rule of law believe that we should have an ID that matters. At the same time, growing up in California, my school was, my elementary school was over 90% Hispanic, and those were my peers and my friends, and I know people who wanted to either be forever American citizens or work here and be productive members of our community. And I think one of the most frustrating issues about this particular issue is that we're trying to have immigration policy at a state level through an Identification Act. And to me, that is the most ridiculous thing we've ever done. There is no doubt that we need to make sure that our ID and our driver's license is valid and that the rule of law rules that we have valid ID. At the same time, for those of us who are sitting here dealing with this issue, to look out and see this rift in our community between those who want to be here legally and can't, and then at the same time look up at Congress and they are refusing to deal with this issue. And as far as giving us a line for people to get into to be here legally is incredibly frustrating, because here's what they've done. They've passed real ID on us, which we need to protect the security of this country, but have not given any line for people to get into to get here legally. And then it's dumped onto us in to deal with this problem. I got to tell you that there's not hardly a comment that was said on any side of this issue that I didn't agree with. The fact is that we need to have immigration laws that people can trust, that people know who's here, that we have voters who are citizens who have the right to vote. We have people who hold a driver's license who are here legally. At the same time, we have got to have Congress address the issue of the needs of people to be here legally. And I would say that all of us, regardless of where we are on this particular bill, we have got to put pressure on Congress to go forward with an immigration policy that actually makes sure that people have the right to be here legally and that we can remove people who break our laws. And I think everybody agrees with that. And I just want to say that everybody's testimony has been very, very moving, and I appreciate it. And I want to say that what we really need to do is that we need to go forward with real ID. It's important that we have faith in our documents, that we know that what they say is what they mean. And so I'll be voting for this bill. At the same time, for those who want to push for Congress to make some action, I definitely will be an advocate on that front too, and I'll be voting aye.
Thank you. My colleague has reflected many of my comments. I think that the rule of law that many of you talked about tonight includes a rational immigration policy, which we don't have. We're here tonight, as my colleagues have articulated, because of a failed federal immigration debate and the failure of the feds to provide a useful outcome. The bill, much of the bill is law now. As the chair points out, if the bill passes out of committee tonight, and I believe that it will continue to work its way through the legislative session and be receptive to the kind of thoughtful changes that are being advanced in hearings like this and the previous hearings that have occurred. I submit this is exactly the venue in which the debate ought to take place. Conversely, we should continue to press our federal colleagues to bring us a rational solution to this huge national issue.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'd like to remind everyone that in the world right now, there are 4.3 billion people more needy than the Latinos in South America. Now, the suggestion is that when we get a legitimate and rational immigration policy, it must not only be fair to those in Mexico, but it must be fair to everyone in the world who has even greater needs than the Latino community. So I hope everyone out here, because of the desire for a balanced scale, nobody's superior to anyone else, that everybody throughout the world will have a chance to participate in immigration policy that is within the boundaries of what this country can sustain with our not only our economy, but our natural resources. So just everyone think on that and keep this in balance. 4.3 billion people.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Starr, do you have any comments?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would say that I agree with many of the comments of my colleagues tonight. And I, too, want to commend Tom McClellan for your straightforward response and responsiveness, I think, to this committee. You've got a big job ahead of you as you work through the process. Hopefully this bill will work its way through the process and ultimately pass. But you really got a lot of work ahead of you as a rulemaking process. You know, the Senate Bill 424 was adopted in the Senate floor, the minority report, that has a lot of the same information, same language in it. That bill was referred to Ways and Means earlier last year, and never to see the light of day.
So I'm a little nervous about sending this bill down to Ways and Means, Mr. Chair. But I trust that we have a commitment that the bill will not go to Ways and Means to die like a lot of bills sometimes do. But this bill will be worked and reported out of Ways and Means back to the Senate floor and for action on the House floor as well. So I think it's way past time that we do what this bill contemplates we doing here in Oregon. I think it's the right public policy. Again, I'll align myself with many of the comments my colleagues have made about immigration policy at the federal level. That's a federal issue. It needs to be dealt with at the federal level. Border issues need to be dealt with at the federal level. Those are not things that we can really affect as state legislators. What is in front of us today in Senate Bill 1080 is something that we can, and I think it's important that we do it. And so, Mr. Chair, I'll be supporting this bill, and I'd like to just welcome those that are watching on the Internet, including a friend of mine in the state of Georgia. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. And I will say, too, and I appreciate all the great comments from the committee, and Senator Larry George, I think you said a lot of those very well. I've been working on this issue since 2003 in various machinations of it. The clear issue is, and as we have heard the testimony, and I appreciate all of you who have come during the last month as we've been working on this bill, and the amendment that we adopted today reflected a lot of the testimony that we received during the month of January to try and make this legislation that begins with the executive order as smooth and workable for the citizens of the state. But as my colleagues have pointed out, it has been a tremendous failure by our federal partners to deal up front with the issue of immigration, and which has inevitably been drawn into the issue of a secure driver's license. And sometimes it's difficult for us to separate the two. We as legislators, as state governing bodies, have a responsibility to make sure we have a secure driver's license. And the information that we have, that the governor has, clearly articulates that there are criminal sanction groups that are using the lax status in Oregon to do that, and we have to handle that. At the same standpoint, it does inevitably get mixed up with many of the issues and the deep heartfelt feelings that we have heard in this committee. We need to recognize the fact that in this country, where we have 5 or 5.5% unemployment, which historically by standards has been considered full employment, that what happens when we don't, to our economic engine, when we don't have the people to help us continue to throttle up this economy and move forward. We need people who want to come to the United States. They should have a right to have their head held high, to walk in here, to be able to help build our economy, and be able to feel that they can move to and fro their own country freely, and that we know who they are and we respect what they contribute. But the federal government has to solve that. They can't, out of one side of their mouth, say, you know, we're concerned about building the economy, on the other hand, say, we are afraid politically to do it, so let's kick it down to Oregon, California, Nevada, and try to do the work for us, because we don't want to make those tough decisions. When it comes to immigration, it has to be tough, it has to be fair, and it has to be practical. And I think, as Senator George pointed out, I think everybody in this committee is willing to work aggressively to try and answer that question so that we can maintain the health of our economy. But on the other hand, we also have to recognize our responsibility. Our responsibility is clearly with the federal government, whether we like it or not. It's clearly the Senate in a unanimous vote said we don't like many of the provisions of the Real ID Act. But in the final rules, it made it clear that a legal presence standard is going to be required for our citizens to freely travel within our own country, which I do say, and I said on the floor of the Senate last spring, was appalling to think that those are the kind of hamstrings we're going to put on our own citizens. So we have an issue with 100 to 150,000 people, which we are very sympathetic to and we want to continue to work on. On the other hand, we have 2.5 million Oregonians who are going to be told their rights are going to be restricted unless we deal with the secure driver's license. And it is a Solomon's choice that is not welcomed by any of us. But the one thing I do know for sure, and that is with the governor's executive order, which is now law, it is our responsibility when we identified some clear difficulties in that, to try and close those loopholes to make it as less inconvenient as possible, recognizing we may still have more work to do. So I appreciate everybody's feelings about it. I think there's a great sense of unanimity among this committee. We understand those issues. We have farmers. We have people who are business people who understand the economic impact of this. But we need to work together to help solve that and get the people back in Washington, D.C. to have the courage to solve that. So we have a motion on the floor to adopt the bill. I'll take a roll call vote on the adoption as amended of Senate Bill 1080, please.
Senator Larry George?
Aye.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Excused.
Senator Berger?
Excused.
Vice Chair Starr?
Aye.
Chair Metzger?
Aye. Senate Bill 1080 has been referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. I know it's been a long day. Thank you all very much, Berger.